Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're going to have an open forum today, but first I wanted to kick it off with a discussion about what happened last week regarding Juan Williams, the now former news analyst for NPR News and also a commentator on Fox News. He was dismissed last week after remarks he made on the air on Fox News that were perceived as racist and bigoted, and it happened very quickly, and there was something of a firestorm about it. So I've invited an old friend, Jill Geisler of the Poynter Institute. She's with senior faculty there. Jill, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Ann.
To talk about it, and if you have a comment, I welcome your comments and questions as well. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, too.
That's my dog. He wanted to chime in.
Okay. don't you love live radio?
Get that out of the way.
Jill, there's been a lot of turmoil over this, kind of an amazing amount in a way, and it has a lot to do with the perceptions, the polarity, the differences between NPR and, say, Fox News, partially, but let's talk about those distinctions and what we mean by news analyst and news commentator. What's the difference?
Sure. And in fact, I think you referenced Juan Williams as a commentator, and his title with NPR was an analyst.
Right. And he's a commentator with Fox.
Right.
Yeah.
And exactly. And I believe that in journalistic terms, and this is how I'll walk through it for you. Let's use politics as an example. A straight reporter who is doing an objective report on a story is going to say, this is what the candidate said today at a speech, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or this is what the candidate is saying in his or her ad. And it is a recitation of what this person, ostensibly an accurate recitation. It is possible that that person will point out, some differences in what the person said last time, if there are differences, and will go out of his or her way to find another point of view, especially if what this person said appears not to tell the full story or may take one side of an issue. Now move into analysis. A person doing analysis is tasked with putting context to that same speech or that candidate's track record. I would point to PolitiFact, for example, which is a Pulitzer Prize-winning feature that was started by the St. Petersburg Times, and now many other newspapers have picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
PolitiFact drills down very deeply into the complete accuracy and context of a piece of information. It could be that ad, it could be that speech, it could be a claim that a politician has made. And that analysis comes to a conclusion that says, this was true, this was false, this was barely true, this was pants on fire, not true. Now, the third is commentary. Opinion rather, commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, if I were the reporter who became an analyst, who became an opinion monger or a commentator, I would be saying, this is what this person said, and I don't trust him, and I don't think you should vote for him. I think the country would be better served if we voted for this person rather than that person. And so clearly when you get into the area of opinion, you are trying to influence people's behavior and influence in their thought, ultimately move people to action. And I think that's really the best distinction I can make, the clearest distinction I can make ethically. And I think as journalists, we look very carefully at who we put into these roles. The younger and less experienced you are, we'll put you in the role of reporter because we know that we have a system of checks and balances that even if you were not fully reporting a story, maybe if you missed something, there's an editor there that says, you know what, you forgot to ask this point of view, or, you know, I think this is incomplete, or maybe we're taking this out of context. As you grow in experience and expertise, you may be asked to do analysis. And you may be a journalist asked to do that because you've covered a beat. I would use Nina Totenberg at NPR as an example. She reports on the Supreme Court, and then she is also asked put the decisions from time to time to come in for interviews and analyze what the trends are.
Mm-hmm.
But she rarely, I don't believe I would ever hear Nina Totenberg say, here's who I think the president ought to appoint to the Supreme Court, or here's why I think this nominee is not qualified.
Mm-hmm. The Jules Whitcover in the Baltimore Sun wrote about how over time, and I see what he's talking about, since the 50s especially, when he was a kind of the shoe leather, reporter, there's been a blurring between even a news reporter and sometimes a news analyst. There's a lot of analysis woven into a lot of news stories, and that's partly, he says, because it's a function of the changing economics of particularly newspaper journalism.
I think it's more than the changing economics. I think that we're also looking at the 24-hour news cycle. Opinion costs little to produce. Journalism is expensive mm-hmm. to produce. Sending someone overseas to cover a story, sending someone out to City Hall to cover a story, requires that you employ someone, pay their salary, pay them overtime. Bringing someone in to comment on someone else's reporting is far less expensive. And so we have filled a lot of our airwaves, in particular on cable TV, on all, on MSNBC, on Fox, on CNN, with talk about the news and some reporting. And to varying degrees, news organizations are investing in that original journalism. That's one of the things that distinguishes NPR. Most of its investment is not in commentary. In fact, it's in the actual news gathering function, with the addition of carefully selected people to deliver analysis, or employing its own people to, at a certain level of expertise, to provide analysis at certain times.
My guest is Jill Geisler. She is senior faculty at the Poynter Institute. It's a nonprofit school for mid-career journalists. It focuses as well on ethics and decision-making. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the conflagration after Juan Williams was dismissed last week after he made remarks on Fox News about his fears. Let's talk about that. He said, Jill, that he admitted that sometimes he's afraid, or when he sees people in airports with Arab garb on, it sometimes makes him afraid. He went on to define that more, talk about it more, and say that doesn't mean that's right. It's just how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that fall for you in the commentary analysis?
I think it really hovers, mm-hmm. in a gray area. And it's my understanding, and I base this only on what quotes that I have seen, is that this statement perhaps alone might not have cost him his job, but the fact that there was, in the opinion of NPR, a pattern of deviation from analysis to personal commentary that appeared to be trying to influence people's opinion, that they made this choice. And at least if you believe the quotes from Vivian Schiller and from the ombudsman, Alicia Shepard at NPR, this was not an isolated incident. And I teach management and leadership, and so mm-hmm. I recognize that personnel issues
right.
are always complex and often aren't revealed to people as to, this is the time we sat down with Ann and warned her about her behavior, mm-hmm. and this is the talk we had, and this is the commitment she made. I don't know any of that backstory.
Right. Yeah, I mean, usually it's nobody else's beeswax.
Well, there's a reason that personnel files are considered.
Right.
But at the same time, as a journalism organization, we hold other people accountable for transparency when they fire people. We try very hard as journalists to find the story behind the story if we feel that that it's important as it affects public policy.
614-292-8513. Andrew, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I actually kind of had a question overall about being that your guest is an educator in journalism. I was sort of wondering, what other sources, from her point of view, in that position, has she found that are good quality sources of reporting versus analyst or commentary?
You mean on the air broadcast?
Yeah, on the air broadcast, either published blogs, online resources. I personally enjoy the Christian Science Monitor, but I was just wondering any other things that she might have found that tend to skew more towards reporting versus analysts, because I feel like, at least from my experience, I'm not the only person that has found it harder increasingly every day to find reporting versus commentary, especially for what she had mentioned being that we're in a 24-hour news cycle.
I think you raise a really good question. And I think that when we talk about reporting versus analysis, I'm not opposed to analysis. I think analysis is very important. What I think that we have to be concerned about is when people are framing issues narrowly, when they're setting up false dichotomies. You know, this is either going to be about everyone's right to abortion or nobody having an abortion. You know, that there are always shades of gray, but that frequently news outlets, especially those in cable, which focus in many cases on heat rather than light, like to frame things in narrow terms. There are many times that we've been asked as faculty of the Poynter Institute to take part in a debate on cable TV, and we'll say, wait a minute, the story is much more complex than reducing it to just one side versus another. Most stories have many shades of gray in them, and it's a little more work to wade through the backstory, which is why I like PolitiFact, for example. Mm-hmm. It takes a while to read the analysis of why something someone says can be partially true. and so in terms of what I like going shopping for lots of ideas. I do think I agree with you that the Christian Science Monitor does a good job. I happen to know the editor, and I know his commitment to the core values of journalism. I think that when I read pieces, whether it's in the New York Times or whether I'm watching them reported on Fox News, I want to see if they are clearly labeled as news or analysis. I can watch a straight news report on Fox News. However, many of their programs are skewed toward commenting and framing with news personalities, or I shouldn't say news personalities, with Fox personalities, because Bill O'Reilly or Glenn Beck are people who are there as people who are taking news and using it to frame volatile conversations and share their personal opinions, many of which are shared by the audience who tunes in. And I think my bigger concern is that we as a nation are becoming people who tune into only those things with which we agree, not those things that challenge the perceptions that we may have.
Well, that's something that I do actually even try to do. I'll tune into one station or the other, or read one story that I might not have seen or get it from a source that I might not typically use, and try to find more about that. And I do think that that's a really good point that you brought up, that, you know, we should try to challenge the things that you see, whether it's from a source that you feel is trusted or from your own opinion base. You should always try to view more. But thank you for addressing that question.
And to seek out the best, you know, the best, most enlightened opposition. You know, if you fancy yourself a liberal, then to be paying attention to the conservative viewpoint that's on the round table on ABC this week. If George Will speaks, you know you're listening to a conservative who has a lifelong track record of not just speaking from the top of his head, but from researching. And I think that's what makes it really important. And I hold, you know, I personally hold certain analysts or commentators in higher regard because of their track record of research, of reporting, and of expertise.
We have to take a break. Jill, can you hang in there with us?
Sure.
Great. Andrew, thank you for your question. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we'd like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is here from 2 until 4, right here on WOSU 820, NPR News. 52 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1021 this morning. Sunny skies today and a high of 70 degrees. Still a little windy with gusts of up to 35 miles per hour.
Support for WOSU comes from Thompson Hines Product Liability Practice Group. Thompson Hines litigators handle mass torts and other complex cases for corporations across the globe. More information at thompsonhines.com.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Jill Geisler. She's senior faculty at the nonprofit Poynter Institute. We're talking about the remarks that Juan Williams made on Fox News last week and the repercussions at NPR, where he had been employed as a news analyst. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Mike, you're on the air. You say you're unsure about how you feel about all this.
Ann, it's always good to talk to you. I love your perspective, and I love the openness of your show to allow those of us who are perhaps confused with life in general, as I go through life being, to at least voice our opinion. I preface this by saying that I am a supporter of NPR. I listen to your show daily on the way to work, and I listen to many other shows on NPR. I find that this issue, the reason I'm on the fence, as I told you, screener, is I think if this were going to have died, it would have died, and it would have died had it not been for the fact that there probably are a lot of people like me or people that did like Juan and what Juan had to say and are supportive of him, or this would have gone away. I have some problems with the way NPR has handled this and the way the people, such as your guest today, have been brought on to, if you will, and you can criticize me later, support NPR rather than to detract from it. And I think many of the other political issues that your guests are bringing up are deflections from the real issue here. The real, true, absolute issue here is, did Juan Williams say something truly offensive that the vast majority of us would agree was offensive? I have said since 9/11, I'm Jewish. I have said since 9/11 that if getting on an airplane with a bunch of Jews, if they were the ones that were at least held accountable for the bombings on that day, were the case, I would have trepidation getting on the plane with a group of Jews, and I'm Jewish. Okay? I don't think that is the issue here. We cannot be politically correct in this environment any longer. And if the mere fact that Juan Williams' statement about being uncomfortable getting on planes with a group of Muslims is not politically correct, I'm sorry, I don't think that's grounds for termination. Because I think the vast, and you haven't asked, I think the vast majority of the audience out there would feel the same discomfort. Secondly, maybe more abrasively in this situation, is one of the guests, and I'm not saying it's yours, it may have been Talk of the Nation, but it was in the last 3 days, and they can go back and play the tapes, had the audacity to say, well, look, he's got this $2 million a year job now. Now, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. When was it ever discussed how much money he made at NPR? Ann, do you discuss your salary, Chief?
It's public record, but no, I don't discuss it.
Can I ask you a question? Because I think you're raising some excellent points.
The salary thing had nothing to do with this, except for the fact Fox might recognize that he's worth more than NPR did. That's all that meant. It wasn't a slander as was delivered by the NPR person that, look, he's making all this money now. Okay. Now you can go ahead.
Jill?
My question to you is, what if the requirements of your job were that you were to keep your opinions to yourself, and they had been clearly stated to you by your employer in previous conversations as well, and you said you understood these were the rules, and then you chose to make that statement for reasons of your own, would you not be held accountable?
It would be total grounds for termination. With that in mind, I have not seen any, repeat, any statements of prior malpractice on the part of Juan Williams.
Go back and read Alicia Shepard, the ombudsman,
right,
column. She's got references to past comments that he's made.
Oh, is Alicia with NPR?
Yes. Yeah, no. She's an independent ombudsman.
Right. She is hired by NPR.
Well, hold on.
To serve.
We're going back
ombudsman.
And forth. So she has records of, she has employment records for all of you in terms of when you've been disciplined for something that you've done? I don't think that's a matter of public record.
Mike, hang on. Just one second. Let Jill talk.
Sorry.
No, she's the ombudsman for the journalism. She was not involved in any way in his termination. She, however, is the an ombudsman is the public's representative. She handles complaints. She criticizes NPR and did criticize NPR for the handling of the firing. And has done so publicly in not only in her column but on multiple interviews, saying that the haste with which it was done left the impression that it was this comment and this comment alone that precipitated his separation from NPR.
And it's been clear that NPR has management, and they're not talking about it anymore. We asked somebody from NPR to be on the show. And by the way, I don't work for NPR, but they have said publicly, haven't they, Jill, that there was a string of incidents. This wasn't an isolated incident.
Vivian Schiller is quoted as saying this was essentially the straw that broke the camel's back. That's not a quote.
Right.
And by the way, and I should mention by way of disclaimer, at least, or disclosure, that Juan Williams actually appeared at the Poynter Institute free of charge in a fundraising event for our nonprofit organization. And so he's had a history with Poynter as well, in which he did a lovely job at the conversation.
Well, he's been a highly respected journalist for many years.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about
and
that.
And author, right? on especially on the life of Thurgood Marshall and the civil rights movement.
I want to thank Mike for your call. I appreciate it. You raised some really good points. And what about the whole when you listen to the whole everything that he said, it was in essence not approving bigotry. However, it was clearly a personal opinion about himself.
It clearly was a personal opinion. Was it necessary? Was it, as I say, if this had been the first time and it had been stated in its complete statement, which I think was slightly truncated in the conversation going back and forth, I suspect that it wouldn't have happened. At least that's the sense I get. Now, there's some management criticism to go on here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how clearly this was handled internally all along the way at NPR. Clearly the abruptness of this without the appearance of process gives people reason to be critical. Vivian Schiller's offhanded remark about his, I believe it was words to the effect, and this is not a direct quote, but his fears are, should be between him and his publicist and psychiatrist,
right,
was unnecessary. I mean, the reference to a psychiatrist was unnecessary. And she apologized for that and has apologized repeatedly, as well she should have, because it appeared flippant.
What about Mike's question about this emphasis on the fact that, Juan Williams obviously landed on both feet with the $2 million contract with Fox? Is it fair to point that out every time?
Well, I think the fact that he was hired quickly by Fox was a part of the story, and the amount of money. How do we know it was $2 million? Either he or Fox wanted the world to know. There are other situations in which people's salaries aren't revealed. I would assume that it was a way of validating from Fox's point of view, or from Juan Williams' point of view, or representatives of them, that he was valuable to Fox.
614-292-8513. Hal, you're on the air. You support the decision by NPR to dismiss Juan Williams.
Absolutely. I think it came way too late. I think it was too little too late, in fact. And here's why. I think this country needs to get over the microdrama with somebody like a Juan Williams and some of the other people in this country who have engaged in this sort of thing. The shift over the past 30 years of the political debate has been paid for by the political right, who funnel millions and millions and millions of dollars into these private media sources to undermine. At one time, they wanted to get rid of NPR. But Williams was beyond all of that. He was a shill and had been drifting into that role for years for profit. And really and truly, if you look at the history of this over the past decade, since death and old age of the World War II veterans, who they had to basically placate when they came back from World War II because they were the greatest army in the world, and they did not dare tell them no. All the discussion from the right has been about the private sector, about all of these things that the private sector wants, and two centuries of labor is now the liberal left. Not a word about the benefits of education, wage stability, weekends, public health, retirement. Not a word. Even in NPR doesn't dare to talk about the benefits of labor. It's all about either an argument over nutcase greed or politics.
Well, but, you know, hang on one just a second, Hal. A lot of people, in fact, there's one waiting and there's been others that have called, oppose the decision. They liked Juan Williams. They liked what they perceived as his moderate stance on things. They don't, you know, they don't necessarily agree that he should have been fired, and that they liked that his contrast.
Well, if there wasn't truly a contrast, there would be more education, more public discussion about the actual liberal left. But what happens is that turns into a smear campaign and bashing by the right that never educates, never talks about the benefits, never talks about anything constructive that labor has ever done. It is painted as a some kind of a communist, mm-hmm. Marxist conspiracy and used as a whipping boy, while most of these people have the weekends off only because of the sacrifice, death, imprisonment of people who were labor leaders.
Okay. Hal, thanks for your call.
Sure.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ozzie, you're on the air. You oppose the firing.
I most certainly do.
Tell us why.
I think it's political correctness run amok.
Okay.
I'm not a great fan of Williams. I think, in my opinion, he's too moderate. But I can feel what he says. And I probably would have felt the same way.
When you say too moderate as opposed to the right?
He's not liberal enough.
Okay.
Could I ask a question? I'm sure. Always curious about how people define political correctness. It's a shorthand term that we've come to use, and I'd love to know what political correctness means to you.
It means that he's not supposed to tell what his own opinion is if it might offend somebody else. If I'm in a plane and I see people in Islamic garb, I would feel uncomfortable. And the reason I would feel uncomfortable is I believe that if they're Americans, they ought to use our culture. They can do what they want to at home. But they should be Americans, should basically adhere to our customs.
Could I ask a question again?
Absolutely.
Do you get uncomfortable when you see Catholic nuns in covered up in
no,
religious
don't.
Garb?
No, I don't. But that's religion. These people most probably consider themselves not Americans anymore.
How do you know what other people consider themselves?
I don't. I just want to say I understand his feeling, and I probably would feel the same way.
But the question, Ozzie, is that appropriate for a person who's been hired to do news analysis to give their personal opinion? And we were talking about the distinctions between news analyst and commentator.
All right. Let me say this. If part of his contract, so to speak, was that he would keep his personal opinion to himself, and this is the reason why he was fired, because he didn't, I agree that he should be fired. I do not agree that he shouldn't be able to voice his opinion, and I understand it.
Okay.
I think it's way out of line.
Okay. Ozzie, thanks for your call.
All right.
Take
Thank
care.
You.
Thanks for listening. I just want to tell our listeners, you can the ombudsman post that we mentioned earlier, Alicia Schiller's post, is
Alicia Shepherd.
Shepherd. I don't know why. Thank you.
Schiller and Shepherd.
Glad you're with me. Alicia Shepherd, her post has been, we've put a link for that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. So you can check that out if you want. It's pretty thorough.
By the way, you can also apply for the position because it's rotated every 3 years.
That's right.
And she's coming to the end of her 3-year term. So if you have a strong opinion and in the right background that you should fill it, go ahead and apply.
Yeah, what a way to go out in something of a firestorm. But it's good. You know, it's good. It brings up a lot of these issues that are good to talk about. And a couple people have now brought up that issue, Jill, about, hey, I mean, everybody shares it. Again, it's that blurring the lines that a lot of folks think is okay.
I think what gets to be frightening is when we say, but in this case, I agree with the opinion that the person was not supposed to express because of the parameters of their job. And I think that that's, at some point, a risk that anyone in any occupation takes, that if you are going to go outside of the parameters of what is understood to be your job description or the ethics of your profession, especially when the job description is tied to the ethics of your profession, then if you feel that what you need to say is so important, then you take that risk. I don't know that this particular comment rose to the level of that height of importance to take that risk because I can express a fear, but my fear might not be grounded in fact. I can say I'm afraid of flying as an opinion. An analyst can come right behind me and say, let me show you the statistics about flying that show you that it's safer than driving. But if that program that I'm on only has me talking with other people who have the opinion negative about flying and doesn't really expand it contextually, then my opinion has helped misinform people.
We have to take another break. Jill, can you stay with us?
Sure.
Great. We'll take another break, and we'll come back to callers and emailers if you'd like. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
My wife and I love all the programs along the lines of Car Talk and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. A lot of times, especially say when I'm driving home, I'll be listening to some interesting story and I really want to tell her about it. And inevitably, I know that, you know, she's been listening at home. So it takes our conversations to a different level, I guess. My name is Sid Samsi, and WOSU is my source for local news, information and entertainment for my whole family.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides will be here as Ohio and other states face massive budget deficits. We'll hear about state spending and revenue and what may happen to government services without a tax increase. That discussion begins at 11 on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
53 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40. Sunny skies today, a high of 70 degrees. Still a little windy today with gusts of up to 35 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight and a low of 42, and cooler for Thursday with a high of 55. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Still with us, Jill Geisler, senior faculty at the nonprofit Poynter Institute. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to talk about the issues surrounding the firing of Juan Williams from NPR. And Brenda, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I don't know if I'm confused about the issues, but why isn't anybody equating this to the drumming out of Bob Edwards back during the Bush administration? I don't recall anybody being in a huge uproar on the right, take back the funding of NPR and all this other stuff. I'm just curious about why the two aren't being equated.
What parallel are you drawing between the two of them?
Well, I don't think it was Bob Edwards' idea to leave Morning Edition. I think he was basically forced out. So if he was forced out because of perhaps his liberal leanings during Republican administration, and Juan Williams was it's not a true equation, because I know Juan was voicing some personal opinions and there was that line that was being crossed. But nowhere in all the uproar have I heard anybody bring up the two incidents. And
I don't think political points of view was involved in the Bob Edwards.
He was the morning host, by the way, for Morning Edition.
Right. Yeah. And at the time, my understanding in talking with people who were close to that story was that they were attempting to do to expand or change the format of that show to involve much more on-site reporting and less in studio. And
okay.
His philosophy about the way the show ought to be constructed, not necessarily any political point of view, but just the style, ended up being a point of contention. And as a result of it, they went with other hosts who were more apt to go out and do field reporting.
Okay.
Now, I may oversimplifying that, and there may be other internal issues, but I do not recall at the time that anything related to points of view or opinion, because I think if you actually would talk to Bob Edwards, and he's written a book on extensively on the life of Edward R. Murrow, and he's a strong believer in foundational ethics of journalism, and I think was very careful to keep his opinions out of his programming.
That's what I felt, but I just didn't recall any kind of an uproar, and I really did feel like from the reporting that I heard that he was basically asked to leave, and it was not his idea, and thank you for clarifying why he was asked to leave.
You're right, though. There was an uproar, and it was, again, a criticism of the way NPR handled it. It was, again, a leadership and management issue in which it did not seem that the listeners were fully informed as to what the backstory was or why a better resolution couldn't have been found other than termination.
Thank you, Brenda, for your call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
A lot of management decisions are made in companies and offices around the world every single day. But when it comes to these kinds of things, it's a little bit different, isn't it, Jill?
It is different, and it is the same. It's different in that in many cases, these are personnel issues, some of which are so personal to the people involved that we don't open up their case files. But there's always the question of a certain amount of hypocrisy on the part of journalists. If we want to dig into why a CEO lost his job, if we're going to tell stories about politicians and what they do or don't do correctly, then we can't expect that we won't be held accountable as well when we make decisions that the outcome of which is so public, but the process may be less public.
We have a comment now, an email from Valerie writes, I am so tired of journalists expressing their personal opinions. I applaud NPR for maintaining the standards of good journalism, and Williams is transitioning to a network where he can express his opinions to his heart's content.
You know, Ann, I remember during the O.J. Simpson trial, I would come home from my newsroom, because I was a broadcast news director at the time, and my children would say, do you think he's guilty? Do you think he's innocent? And I'd say, I'm not really going to have a talk with you about it, because you're going to go back to school and tell everybody what Mom thinks. And Mom has to keep her opinions to herself while we cover this story, so that there's no even scintilla of the idea that if I had an opinion about this, it would influence the way we would cover it. Now, I may be awfully strict on that, but that's how strongly I believe as a journalist that we have to have a process that makes certain that that our opinions, which we have as human beings, don't become the guiding force or the defining force of what we do, and that we have checks and balances in our news organizations that say, you know, Anne, and I'm making this up now, Anne, you are an adoptive parent, so I know you have strong feelings about adoption. So that can help inform this story, or it also could bias that story. Let's always make sure that we keep that in the forefront. Or I come from a farming family. That could inform my thoughts on a story, or it could also narrow my thoughts. And so we oftentimes disclose internally in our organizations where we may have a potential for bias, and sometimes disclose it even to our audiences. For example, I told you mm-hmm. off the air, and I'll say on the air mm-hmm. at the beginning of this, that the former dean of the Poynter Institute is now a senior vice president at NPR. I have not talked with him and intentionally sort of stayed away from talking to him during this because I didn't want even the appearance of having some bias in favor of a point of view about this.
And it should be said that Juan Williams has appeared at WOSU for fundraisers in the past. Mm-hmm. He's benefited the station before. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ed, you're on the air. You favor the decision by NPR to fire him.
Yes, and of course I have only I didn't hear the initial comments until they were replayed, and I have only what NPR has to go on. But you know, when you are a news reporter and a commentator, or you should say an analyst, you need to keep the appearance of any bias, as you were just talking about, out of your opinion. If he had said to O'Reilly, you know, there are people in this country who get nervous when they get on a plane, there probably wouldn't have been the controversy, because then he is giving an analysis of the news and keeping his personal opinion out of it. By the same token, I don't hear anybody standing up and saying, well, this is very similar to the Helen Thomas case. There are all these people that are complaining about Juan Williams getting fired. Sure didn't stand up for Helen Thomas when she made her comments about Israel earlier this year. Granted that AP is a private company versus NPR having the government money in there, but the same thing stands. You know, she was a reporter and an analyst, and she, you know, that's one of those things where you keep your comments to yourself.
I hear what you say, and I believe she was working for UPI.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I get those two confused all the time.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Okay. Do you see a parallel? Bye. Thank you, Ed, for your call. Jill, no one has brought up Helen Thomas that I can recall in the last few days.
I've seen references to okay. it, to Helen Thomas, to Rick Sanchez, to a few others who have made public statements. And again, you know, Helen Thomas in her role was, I believe, you know, sort of on the fringes of daily journalism. But nonetheless, it's a powerful reminder that what she said, she bears responsibility for. And again, I think the previous caller who talked about the difference between saying there are people who have fears when they see this, and I have fears. There's something about personalizing those fears that almost, in that statement, that almost validates it without putting it into greater context and saying, maybe they're irrational, here's why it, you know, and then exploring in that conversation why those fears are in fact, founded in fact or are truly, irrational. That conversation didn't do that.
By the way, the NPR Code of Ethics there's a link to that in Alicia Shepard's comment or posting. So if you go to that wosu.org/allsides, we've posted her comment or we posted a link to it. And inside of that is the NPR Code of Ethics. When in my experience in journalism, the phrase opinion leader has been put out there. In other words, whether you like it or not, once your name appears as a byline in the paper, or once your voice is heard over the radio or your face is on television in a news position, it's not what you signed up for, but you are an opinion leader, and that's why you have to keep your opinions to yourself.
Because it could appear that you are attempting to change people's minds or influence their actions, to influence the outcome of public events. And I think because journalists are supposed to be the watchdogs in a society, then if they are playing two roles, one is to be a watchdog, but the other is to tell you how to vote, for example, or to influence your opinion on something in the public sector, it needs to have a big frame around it that says, this is opinion. And the other, I guess the other thing that becomes so important is opinion based on what? Opinion based on research, on experience, on references that you can cite, or opinion based on emotion. And a lot of times today, the requests for people to come on and be interviewed seem to be to reflect an interest in drama rather than discourse. And discourse is a little more boring than drama. It takes a little more time to develop a cogent, thoughtful discussion than it does to pit two people against each other to shout.
James, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You oppose the firing.
Yes, I do. I'm politically a liberal with opinions that frequently would be left of center, but I do oppose the firing. I think it really smacks of sort of rigid censorship, and I say that in the context that the snippet appears to me to have been taken out of context, because on other news services, if you watch the full context of what he was saying, he comes to the conclusion that even though I feel this way, we can't treat people this way, and he makes quite the opposite point, which kind of is a parallel with the Agriculture Department official who was fired, but actually it turned out she was saying quite the opposite. So I think the bottom line is I think NPR has the right to hire whom it wants to, but I think the firing was handled in a very clumsy fashion, as was the Bob Edwards termination. So that would be my conclusion. I oppose them for that, those reasons.
Jill?
Well, I think this is – well, let me just ask you a question, Ann.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose the title of your program?
The idea was that over time we would try to reflect as best we could all sides. Sometimes people call up and say, that wasn't all sides.
Well, and I think
there
the
are many
caller
sides.
That you just had on mm-hmm. is really representative of – the kind of attempt that public radio has for all sides. You just heard from someone who says, in principle, has certain political leanings that would seem self-identified liberal, but opposes what happened. And you didn't pre-select people to come on your show who only agreed with what you had to say, or narrowed or caused people to have such a narrow frame of the conversation
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't introduce new ideas. And I think that to me is the essence of the kind of journalism that we're trying to make certain that we continue to uphold in this country. A wide variety of ideas, individuals such as your caller, stating as individuals their personal opinion, and journalists taking that information and presenting it to people, but not overlaying it with their own opinion or using their opinion to decide who could get in and who could get out.
Yeah, but Ann, the point is that Juan, in this case, didn't overlay it with his opinion. He stated an opinion and then said, but my opinion is wrong.
James,
you can't treat people that way.
James, what about the idea that was put forth earlier that it changes everything when you say some people feel this way versus I feel this way?
I think it probably would have been better had he stated it that way. But when you're talking on live TV or live radio, sometimes you don't exactly choose the best words in the world. And that's why I'm saying the firing was clumsy.
Okay.
And I believe in a previous problematic interview, he described Michelle Obama
yeah.
as Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress, words to that effect.
Yes.
And there was a conversation, that conversation about with him about that type of framing of a conversation did not seem to follow, the guidelines of NPR. And so in this case, if you were to take this isolated statement that he made, perhaps one could say if that was the first and only time. But I don't think that NPR was looking at this in isolation. In fact, they've stated that that was hardly the case. It was, to them, indicative that a person who is, in fact, accustomed to being on the radio and on the air made a conscious choice in the face of previous admonishments that his personal opinion was not about, it was not appropriate. And I am not arguing about this particular statement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reflecting what NPR has said was a continuing conversation with him about stepping over the line.
Thank you, James, for your call. And I want to get Bella on real quickly. Bella, you've waited a long time, but I can only give you about 30 seconds. Can you help me out with that?
That's fine.
Okay.
I approve it. And I want to say one thing. Professionally, I think him wearing two hats for his own professional advancement, I think NPR should have let him go a long time ago when he decided to go on Fox. Secondly, I think some people misconstrue when people say a cultural bias and they identify with it, saying, well, that's okay because I think that's not okay. And he should be wise enough not to express that bias. And I'm curious if he would have said, as a black man, when I'm in airports and I see white men in uniforms with guns, I get nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been posed, yeah.
What would have happened with that? But it goes to this sense of as a nation, we're not careful. And we identify with our fears, unfortunately.
Bella, you recognize the music? We got to go.
I can't hear it. Okay.
Okay.
So I
thank
it.
You
it's
for
very,
waiting, Bella.
Yeah,
thank you so much. And Jill Geisler of the Poynter Institute, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome. Be
Take
well.
Care. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.